Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and with me as ever is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David. Hello, film lovers. Hello, guest.
Guest. We have a guest. That rare occasion. Please welcome to the show Mr. Justin Edwards. Hello, Justin.
Hello, David. Hello, Marek.
How are you doing?
Very good, thank you, very good. It's an absolute pleasure to be here at the Fandango Studios.
You've just flown in straight from Hollywood.
That's right. Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much straight here. I just hopped in a cab from Heathrow, from Hollywood Airport to Heathrow Airport, and then came here to the Fandango recording suite in the heart of London's Latin Quarter.
This is the only... Justin is featuring in a film at the cinemas right now.
Which seems kind of apt for this.
The film
podcast
is called Love and Friendship.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how rarely it happens that we interview actual
and
stars.
This is the only publicity that you're doing for this film, right?
Pretty much. I've turned down everything else. I was going to do like
Empire,
Variety, Harrow Advertiser. There's all the big ones. But I said, do you know what? No, I'm going to keep my powder dry, and I will only discuss it on the Film Fandango podcast, so that both his listeners can get the real lowdown.
An exclusive. So, any celebrity beefs from on set?
We should talk about the film first of all.
We probably should. Yeah, before the beefs.
So, it's on at the cinema at the moment. It's an adaptation of based on a Jane Austen novel.
It's not a novel, is it?
It's a novella.
Right.
And it's I'm not sure if it's epistolatory or pistolatory. Water pistol novel, which means letters, Marek. It means they've written letters. The whole novel is based around letters written between Lady Susan and her confidant, and it's been adapted by Whit Stillman, who's a very celebrated film director, and he's written the screenplay himself and now published the book of the screenplay well afterwards. So he's very much taken Austen's work and made it, because it's a previously sort of unfilmed piece, because it was published by her when she was quite young and didn't really sort of have a great ending, and she didn't publish it. It was part of her collection of stuff that she said, no, this isn't ready to go, I think. So so it's, you know, rather than make another Sense and Sensibility or one of those,
but it feels quite different to those ones, I thought, from they have a similar tone, whereas this one actually has a bit of darkness to it.
What's a rough story for people, I'm one of the two people listening to this. I'm thinking about going to the cinema.
Well, firstly, well done. You've made a great choice listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
I hope it gives you some informed decisions about your cinema viewing. The film concerns Lady Susan Vernon, played by Kate Beckinsale, and she's a manipulative and scheming widow.
Her or the character?
Yeah, a bit of both, really. Mostly the character. Manipulative and scheming, and she... presents herself at her brother-in-law's estate, which is me. I play a brother-in-law, and basically wheedles her way in and out of various people's affections, tries to marry her daughter off. She has no money, she's skint, so she clings around to society and hangs around the rich people, and finds a way of marrying herself and her daughter off and getting into people's affections and flirting terribly with everyone, and being a very interesting, scheming, manipulative woman that all the men sort of fall for and all the women hate. And she's got, and she has a friend and confidant who's played by Chloe Sevigny, who is an American from Connecticut who's living in London at the time, married to Stephen Fry, and so they share a lot of, you know, gossip and stuff between them. But it's very sort of all that peering backwards and forwards, and people shuttling about in carriages between the town and country and having
It's quite talky, isn't it? I really noticed it. I think I've watched some films which were there's a lot of script in there.
The read through for the film was about 3 hours. It's really, really long, but we do it very fast, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And that wasn't, I don't think we were ever told to do that. I think everyone just automatically spoke really quickly. This is a long scene. If we're not, you know. And there's very little camera movement. It was fun when we were filming it. We're kind of like, sure, should we move? Do that again? Should I walk across? No. Don't. Yeah, he really wants the stillness of it all. And actually, it works very well because it's.
I thought Kate Beckinsale was great.
She was excellent.
Yeah, really good.
Like, it's quite an interesting character as well because it feels quite different for Austin that she's almost a sociopath. That's a very sort of modern portrayal of the character, potentially, that you never see her mask drop. No. So it's potentially it's not a mask at all. It is just...
There's no moments where you kind of get her... Well, she sort of reveals her true motives to the Chloe, to Lady Alicia, but...
Yes.
She doesn't... Yeah, that's the only person who gets sort of the true side of her. There is one moment, and I'm trying to think where it is, where you suddenly see her in a slight... panic when they have that sort of letter reveal.
With the letter,
there is a moment where she kind of wobbles and it's like, oh Christ,
she gets right back on the horse, turns it around again.
Yeah, no, I thought she was actually fantastic in it, really good.
What was it like to film it? Where you've because it wasn't filmed in England, was it?
It was filmed in Dublin last year, last February and March, so it's freezing cold. It was very nice. Yeah, it's a nice place to film Dublin. So Hoth Castle is my house, which is Churchill, and there was another stately home in Dublin, did some filming in and some interiors, but I was mostly in and around the castle, which already has beautiful sort of period interiors and is all sort of set up and has horses and stuff and everything going on, so it's the right place to do it.
I'm always fascinated at how many difference between making TV, say you're making Doctors where they just shoot one scene and don't rehearse it, to TV, kids TV, where you've got to do 800 pages in a day.
Yeah.
What's it like doing the films?
That was that whole film was shot in 26 days, which is really short for a thing like that. So it was quite relentless. Also, Witt, the director, didn't like the actors to have a schedule, so he didn't know what you were filming the next day. Because he said, I don't want to over-prepare, I don't want to, whatever. So I think Kate must have had a bit of a schedule.
It
was quite like you got it the night before. They say, right, tomorrow...
Oh, my God.
Tomorrow we're filming this scene, so you'd learn it then. Which is kind of... So, and a lot of it's first takes as well. There's a lot of, you know... which I think lends a lot to the film.
Was there someone with a drink problem? Because that sounds like a sort of thing they do.
The kind of thing they just do. Just off his face.
To stop people from drinking, you've got to learn your lines the night before to stop people from getting pissed.
Maybe that's it. Maybe every film, they always say that to me.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think Kate must have had it more in advance because she had massive long pages of diary. She's very good at learning lines. But a lot of it was changed on the day. That 12 Commandments scene with Tom Bennett getting the 12
Commandments. He's really brilliant,
But that was rewritten on the we turned up in the morning and during makeup it said, I've rewritten the scene.
Wow.
I just handed it to her and then we hadn't filmed it. Which is fine because of the thick of it and things like that, which is very last minute and script changes during scenes. I'm quite used to that.
And was it two cameras or one camera?
One camera. Yeah, it's one,
wow.
one big film camera that sees everything. And very nice Dutch DOP, really interesting. And he lit it, but it looks beautiful.
And did you think it was going to do that well when it on? Or
I couldn't tell. I was quite baffled at various points during the film because it was so right. Tomorrow you're going to film this scene, and you have to think back. Go right, oh, that's the scene in which I met her, and she's met him. Blah, blah, and then we've just about got time to sort of work that out, and then you film it.
And it wasn't filmed in chronological order.
No. No, just again because it was really low budget, so constraints of right, we've got this actor for this day, so this for that, and so you're backwards and forwards a bit. So it's quite
blimey.
Who was the nicest actor in it? The nicest,
apart from me. They're all nice. They were,
But so you've got to kill all of them apart from one.
Oh right, okay.
This is the thing people want to hear.
James Fleet.
He's very nice.
He's a really good man, Fleety. No one calls him that. I'm going to from now on. But he was great, and he's really
good. People know James Fleet, famous for the bloke in
Four Weddings and a Funeral. Yeah, sick, but he's a really good actor. I've done lots of things with him over the years. So that Monk sitcom.
Oh yeah,
a few other things. And he's very good company, really good fun. And Gemma Redgrave as well. It's a good laugh.
Who's Gemma Redgrave?
Who's Gemma
Redgrave? Which one is she? Which was she?
Oh, she's James Fleet's wife. She's Lady.
Oh yeah.
She's my mother-in-law. Yeah. He's my father-in-law. Yeah.
They, as a couple, I thought were excellent, really good, actually, because I noticed it must have been so hard to sort of give off the impression of being married when you can show no affection to each other whatsoever.
Any way at all.
Yeah.
And also, it's quite underplayed, because a lot of it is, there are sort of gags in it that aren't milked in the way that, because actually that scene of him reading the letter out to her and then being a... And just having a really bad cold is a very interesting directorial. I just want you to have a really awful cold in this scene. Okay. So it's just quite kind of odd, subtle things. But there's nice little... There's an argument that I have with James... Well, an argument, just that line at the end when I say, oh, we call her the Surrey Songbird. No, we call her the Kentish... It's just slightly pointless father-in-law arguing with his son-in-law. And then a kind of... I think a lesser director would have had that as a gag that you might have revisited three times. But... It just sort of happens once and it's slightly skated over. It's just nicely gives a nice texture to the film's full of...
And people were buying into it. I mean, people were laughing out loud in the cinema at these bits. And they are quite gentle.
Yeah, no, it's not. I was surprised at the screening I went to where people really kind of, ooh, there's, you know... I think the Americans have gone crazy. I was talking to my producer and he said they really kind of...
Well, it's got the levity that these things are often missing, because it's all so mannered and stiff that they often go, well, it must be earnest at the same time.
And everyone must be deeply serious and...
There's some odd decisions which make you think it's a comedy where... They introduce all the characters, they do a sort of spotlight on your faces.
Yeah, it's slightly weird little sort of...
So it feels a bit like it's going to be a comedy. Yeah, sort of quite.
And there's little bits like, we know when the letters come up of the, when the letters are being read aloud on the page, little hiding things like that. No.
26 days, that's incredible.
It was going to be 27, but they did it quicker because Kate was so good in her lines.
Wow.
They did very few retakes.
And she's beautiful, she's in her 40s. That sounds terrible. but she looks much younger.
Who would have
that.
Thought a lady over 40 could be anything
I
less,
think
less than revolting.
Very, very attractive.
What's the thing? Yeah. Well, imagine that. I
mean, since you've recently turned 40, Marek, you must be looking to the over 40s.
Yeah,
but
I didn't mean it like that. I meant she still looks very, very young.
Ironically, you look like an old woman.
Yes. I've taken all of her age from her.
You've done a kind of Dorian Gray thing.
Yeah.
But no, it's a very good fun film. It was quite quick. It wasn't, we didn't have sort of hilarious scrapes and mess around on set, because it was just, it was a lot of work to do.
Of course. I was actually pleasantly surprised by Kate Beckinsale, because having only seen her in sort of the Underworld films and then Shooting Fish back in the 90s, I was going, there must be a reason she only gets these, but she could do it. She could do it all.
Really good. Well, I think because also, let's talk about, she did Last Days of Disco with him and a couple of other kind of. So he's always been a big fan of her and Chloe Sevigny, so he uses them and knows that she can do it. No, she was great now, really good.
It's fantastic. And can I ask, because Marek must be desperate to know, you were in Thor 2 as well, weren't you?
That's correct.
And Marek's a big Marvel fan, so I. any anecdotes of working with Natalie Portman on that one? Or?
Portman and Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Again, not really. That was quite a nice job. I was on wet weather cover for that for a week, and we just
weather cover.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, you just have to go in, and they said we're going to film this massive scene with everything coming down, but we can't do it when it's actually raining because they built a rain machine.
Okay.
It was quite like they flipped over it.
Does the rain machine break in the rain?
It just doesn't look as good. And there were loads of stunts. It was a big, big stunt piece, that one scene where he comes down and all the cars explode and whatever, and all the police.
And that happened, did it?
That was all there. I had a stunt double who missed his crash mat on the tape they used, I think. It's amazing. He was on, they had endless cranes with wires and lots of stuntmen around. And the action and all the fantastic effects, all exploding glass in the police car windows are all got rigged to explode. So everything explodes and these stuntmen get thrown back in the air and this huge sort of thing happens.
And you're in a comfy chair.
I'm a reasonably comfy chair. Well, I shan't be in that shot. And then they go, that's good. Okay, reset and go again. And it's 4 hours to reset because they have to put all the, reset all the exploding things. Repair the stuntman's back. Put everything back together and then explode it all again. I mean, it's a real thing. So they kept away ages for the conditions right to do the scene. So I basically sat in a trailer for a week having a doze. We just had our son, so I was quite pleased to have a sleep. So I slept a lot and then sort of filmed for one day on that. But it was very nice. That was very, it was like Natalie Portman, who's, perfectly pleasant. Quite short. And then everyone is next to me.
When you say perfectly pleasant, was that loaded?
No, not at all. She, we, you know, I'm a bloke coming in for one day to play a policeman. You know, she's yeah. like, there are other people she'd rather talk to than me. I don't think that's unreasonable.
The bloke playing a butcher for 2 days.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a hierarchy. To
yeah. yeah, exactly. You've got to, you know, got to know your place.
Yeah.
And Chris Hemsworth. But it was the biggest film. That's why it's the biggest film set I've been on. It was the biggest unit base, which is where, as Merrick will explain what the unit base is. A cup of tea.
A unit base is where you turn up, and it's where all the trailers are, and all the makeups are, and basically it's a whole load of weird portable homes.
Around a double decker bus, usually
everyone eats on.
And there's a mobile sort of canteen that people come in, and everyone looks to see what the food's going to be like for the day, and and talks about how shit the catering is.
And if you'd like to ever see what a unit base looks like, just look for those little fluorescent signs on lamp posts.
Say LR, lock, look and base this way.
Yeah, and then you can try and break in.
Any car park near Wembley's got one. But this was the biggest unit base I've ever been on, because it's a massive film.
Yeah.
I had a map, because it was so big. They were there for a while, because they were doing lots of scenes around there, and it's but they built little squares, so the stars trailers form their own sort of private square.
Really?
With named streets.
Wow!
Because each of them, obviously Chris Hemsworth and Natalie had big trailers, they had massive trailers, and they had to have security, so there's trailers around them. And then Chris Hemsworth had a travelling gym, because he has to be, you know...
Of course.
He has to be ripped and pumped before every scene. So he had a gym that went everywhere with him, and a personal trainer. And they have their own private chefs and their own private... And it was just this... So we turn up, and it was quite dark. Me and this other Griffith, who's a very nice Welsh actor, playing this other policeman. And we turn up every morning for a week, and they go, we might need you today. Just wait in the trailers. Have some breakfast. And they had a separate, you know, because it was American, they had most extraordinary good food. And they had separate sort of waffle chefs and different sort of canteens.
Did you have your own trailer? Because normally it's one mobile home with three things in it. And then you could, it moves every time someone else in their trailer moves. So it's really
I was in a three-way, but I didn't have to share it. I had exclusive use of my three-way. They do wobble around a lot.
When I did a thing called Drunk History a year and a half ago, my driver dropped me off. And I went in, and it was really odd, because there was no one else there, but it was in a massive car park, and the food was really good. And I thought, loads of trailers and things like that. So I went and got breakfast straight away, and there was no one, and I ate this breakfast. Well, it was like a good thing. Mm. And gradually people started arriving, and I realised there was another.
You got so free breakfast.
I had my breakfast, and I walked round the corner to where they were filming Drunk Histories, where there were with old just sandwiches with like half a sausage, not even buttered.
Did you find out what it was you'd stolen?
It was for Nava.
It's craft services on about food, but anything I've done American is brilliant, because they have. They're obsessed with bringing you food all the time. And it was quite cold, so you're just sort of standing, waiting around, and someone comes up with just a massive... It's like being at a wedding, a huge tray of canapés at any point during the day. You go, oh, take my breath. I did some filming in America once, and that was for just this... They just say, oh, just get something from the table. The table just has vats of M&Ms and, you know, piles of donuts and just sort of American food. All day.
I mean, that is cameraman food, though, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, they just have sugar. Endless sugar.
And it's at 5 o'clock, they bring these we're normally filming some crappy sandwiches. Awful sandwiches.
Anything left over from lunch is made into a sandwich. It's brought around at 5 o'clock. And everyone devours it. And has really come, oh, God, everybody.
And they're almost stale before you.
Not on the American ones, they don't. They come around with a hot box. You get a hot box on wrap.
Wow.
So when you finish, they come around with a massive. Sort of, you know, meatballs or something served on a plate. It's just, much better.
Sounds great.
It's all about the food, really, isn't it?
podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Well, back on Love and Friendship, the catering was very nice, and I had some nice dinners out in Dublin. So, I mean, it was... Yeah, but that was very good catering, actually, now I think back on it.
Well, go and see Love and Friendship at the cinema.
Do.
And you'll know that everyone ate very well on it.
We all ate very well on it, and that's all there is to it.
All right.
It's very good. I could talk further about it, but that's enough.
What, isn't it secrets?
No, there's no secrets, I don't think. Tom Bennett's very good, isn't he?
He really steals it. Because I only know him from those adverts with the pigeon.
He's in Phone Shop as well, isn't he?
Yes, he's done some things that are noteworthy. But I remember him from the advert with the pigeon, where you can sell your own CDs and DVDs.
I don't even know what it's called,
so it failed. But he's just funny, isn't he? He's got funny bones.
He's just right in it as well, because that first scene where he turns up and does there Church Hill and the whole kind of, you know, brilliant physical stuff. Pretty much all one take. I don't think it cuts off him at all, and it's a really long, insane speech to be in kind of period costume in this kind of luxurious, ornate house.
Well, those staccato speeches are very hard to learn, aren't they? Because there's no sort of link between stuff.
Just sort of, you know, upper class twit thing. But he does it really well.
Yeah.
Very funny man.
Oh, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. We're going to play the casting game next. We haven't played this for a while, but we play it when we've got guests. Justin, if you wouldn't mind adjudicating, picking between our castings, we are going to do, Marek suggested, Lethal Weapon 2.
They're remaking Lethal Weapon, but in Lethal Weapon 2, after the first one, they're all ruined by Joe Pesci. So we thought we'd include him in the casting game.
Who can be the new ruin a film Joe Pesci?
Yeah.
All right. I've given this enormous thought, obviously, which is why I'm now crazily IMDBing people. But Marek, would you mind going first to give me an opportunity to think of a... let's go with the Mel Gibson first.
Okay. Mel Gibson. I'm going to go for the easy choice.
Oh, no.
Channing Tatum.
Oh, okay. There's two easy choices in our casting games.
We always get them confused with Stockard Channing from Greece.
Channing Tatum is not the first lady in the West Wing.
Right.
Channing Tatum, you probably know him as a stripper in Magic Mike.
that's it. Yeah.
And Magic Mike too.
Well, I think that's not a bad choice. I mean, you need someone who looks good.
Yep.
And can do a bit of fighting.
And is funny.
You believe them with a gun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go for, again, the casting game fan favourite of someone playing. And let's remember, Riggs is supposed to be sort of a bit mad and on the verge of a breakdown.
Unhinged.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Tom Hardy.
I think I'm poo-pooing that.
Oh really? Why? Are you not a fan?
He's got no humour to it.
He's very good, but I think it's the twinkle in the eye that Mel Gibson has, you know, before we all realised what he was actually thinking.
Yeah.
You know, particularly in the first Luther Burton, he's quite charming and charmingly unhinged, and you think, oh, I would, you know,
Rather than violently unhinged,
which I think Tom Hardy would do very well. You want someone who's a bit off the wall, bit kooky,
yeah,
but you know, but could still be all right in a fight and be a copper.
So I've won that one.
You're going for Channing Tatum.
Yeah, I'll give
all right, then I'll go first with Danny Glover. Now you want a man close to retirement, believably close to retirement. I'm going to go for. It's about time he was in films again, in my opinion. I'm going to go for Billy Dean Williams, who is Lando Calrissian from the Star Wars.
Now, what's he done since?
That's a good choice.
It's a good choice, yeah.
I can look him up. He's...
I'm sure he's not dead.
He's not dead, no. People were surprised
I'm surprised he's not in Lethal Weapon. He's very, very good.
Oh, no, it isn't looking very good for me.
So he's in a cartoon called Star Wars Detours. He's in all the cartoons. He's in the Lego movie as Lando Calrissian.
He voices him, himself.
Okay. He did an episode of NCIS and Glee.
Oh, well, fine.
You know, Modern Family he was in.
I am going to go for...
He's better than you, right?
well, most people are. Carl Weathers. You would know as Apollo Creed
in Rocky.
The bloke in with the moustache in Predator.
Apollo Creed, he's good.
And he plays Carl Weathers in Arrested Development.
Yes, he does. I'm not so sure about it, because I think, particularly, I'm thinking of him as Apollo Creed. He's mean and tough.
Oh.
I think there's a homely family guy sort of solidity to Danny Glover that you go, oh, I just want him to retire. Let's just let him do his one last job, whereas Apollo Creed thing would go and just sort of headbutt someone to death.
Billy Dean Williams.
I think Billy Dean Williams has got a bit of a
Okay, it comes down to just like the film did, the Joe Pesci's.
Ah.
Now,
who is the Joe Pesci de nos jours?
I'm going to go for Pee Wee Herman.
Do
you know his real name?
What is his real name?
Peter William Herman.
That's right.
Who Ruhan?
I'm not sure what his name. Paul Rubens.
Oh, Paul Rubens.
Isn't it? Paul Rubens.
Yeah, I don't know. He's not kooky so much as sort of. I tell
well,
you.
Well, you don't say because he's going to do his.
I've
guess.
Got to pick one. I'm going to go for. Oh, this is tricky. I can't really remember his character other than he's annoying and comedy light relief. Can I go for Danny DeVito?
Oh, that's too... Yeah.
You think that's too like for like?
It's too similar, you know. Also, if you were going to remake it in this day and age, I mean, Danny DeVito probably...
So you want someone younger?
Not ancient, I mean, he's, you know...
So he's still doing Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
He's going to go for Pee Wee Herman or Danny DeVito. That's a choice.
That's a poor choice. If I was a casting director...
Who would you go for? Who would be your...
Who would you want? Who's the kind of... Who's the annoying... Joe Pesci of our days. Those in James Corden.
Oh, God, yeah. Have you seen any of his American films, sort of Into the Woods or any of
these? I haven't seen Into the Woods. I'd like to see it because Richard Glover's in it.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's great, got Richard, Chris yeah. Pine's phone number as a result. Yeah.
I imagine he got paid as well, or is that what
they're going to do? No, that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going
to do. Just change his number. No, Glover's great. And
he's excellent.
Very good. But I haven't seen him.
There's some really good bits, but Corden can't quite live up to the having a character with layers. You know, he's just not quite likeable enough. But everyone else is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm sorry, who's Jack Black, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
Good choice.
He'd be the modern day. Right. He'd be the crazy. He'd be the wild and crazy guy coming in and being a bit crazy.
Yeah,
but that's not the overruling. You're just Jack Black.
Saying Jack
Black. I'm saying if I was a casting director, I'd probably go. I certainly wouldn't be phoning up Paul Rubens.
Has Richard Glover got Paul Rubens?
Almost certainly. Let's find out. We can just text him.
What was that scandal involving Paul Rubens that ended his career for a bit?
Wanking adult cinema, which is fair enough. It's what you go in there for. But I think it was fine. But because his shows are basically based towards children, they
sure.
Go. Have you ever seen Pee Wee's Big Adventure?
No.
It is insane.
It's an
really
early
nuts.
Tim Burton film
yeah,
as well,
really,
isn't it?
Really bonkers, yeah.
It's because it was a TV show, wasn't it? And that's why
yeah.
Americans sort of loved it. It was the
yeah,
adaptation of that.
Yeah,
but
so it's a spin off of that, but it's quite mad.
No, he's slightly frightening. I only really know him from Mystery Men. Have you seen that? A sort of skewed superhero film with William H. Macy and Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah.
But he plays the spleen, who's the power of his colonic gas. Wonderful character. Yeah. It's got Hank Azaria as a man who throws forks. Called the Blue Raja. It's good. It's funny. All right. Well, then, who are you going for out of those two? Was it?
Oh, do I have to choose?
You
between?
Do yeah. have to. I'm afraid.
What was yours again?
Mine was Danny DeVito.
It's going to be Danny DeVito because he'd do a better job than Paul Rubens.
The boring choice.
But the I think a slightly better casting. But then I don't know. Yeah. No, Danny DeVito, yeah. He's very good, like Danny DeVito.
He is excellent. I sort of forget how good an actor he is as well when you see, if you watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something, he's totally good.
Taxi.
It's great, yeah. Brilliant, My wife bought me the first series of Taxi on DVD. Thanks. He's very good, but he's really, yeah. He's really good.
Did Taxi ever get a sort of Frasier equivalent? Did he get a spin off series?
I think, I'm going to say that I think there was. Wasn't there like a. I think there was a pilot. Who's the bloke who plays the sort of boxer?
He's not Grand Theft Auto, is based on it.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably based on that. What was that Jim Davison sitcom? The Elephant Round the Castle. That's probably based on Taxi.
Yeah.
But they're all good, but they all sort of did well off it.
Yeah.
And apart from Judd Hirsch didn't.
Christopher Lloyd did rather
Christopher
well.
Did all right. The Danny DeVito, he'd done all right. And Tony Danza, isn't it?
Yeah.
He sort of. And there, and what's his face? Thingy Bob, Man on the Moon, him.
Oh, yeah, Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman, yeah.
There's lots of great stories about him just messing him up about and going mental in it.
I watched, I can't remember anyone's name today. What's he called? The tiny James Randi.
Oh yeah,
he was in an episode of Taxi. And now I've got it wrong. He wasn't in an episode of Taxi. He was in something with Christopher Lloyd. There was a really good documentary about James Randi on recently, and I didn't realise he was massive on in America as a escapologist.
Yes,
kind of, we know him over here more in his later years as sort of debunker of
hater of Yuri Geller.
But he appeared in lots of he was in Mork and Mindy. That's why I think so.
Which was a spin off from Happy Days.
Yeah, so maybe I'm thinking of someone else, but yeah, I'm sure he was in Taxi. He's pretty probably in Taxi at some point. That's one. I'll stick with that.
All right. He looks like a wizard now.
Right, yeah, well, which is apt.
It is apt, I suppose. But he denies magic, doesn't he? Wizarding.
It's really, it's fascinating, man.
He's not in Taxi, but he was in Sesame Street and something called Is There Sex After Death?
Oh,
he was in Happy Days.
Amazing Randy.
There we go.
Again.
Yeah. There's our cast. It might not go to sequel, depending on how well the first one does.
Who's in the actual remake?
It's sort of unknown pretty men, I think.
Yeah, you can't replace Mel Gibson, I don't think.
Or is it a TV series?
I think it's
a TV series. It's,
About a maverick cop?
About a maverick cop. And hang on, they've not done the ordering the cast properly. So it's that thing where the guy who plays a bank robber is top billing on IMDb because he got in there first.
That's what's really interesting with IMDb. It lists people by amount of films they've been in.
Hmm.
So occasionally when you look up a film and there's some weird person you've never heard of, it's the extra who goes on IMDb
and types them all in.
They've been an extra in lots of Hollywood things. Their rating's really high.
You can't edit your own profile on IMDb. There's some lies on mine that I've left on there because I haven't put them on there about where I was born. And when my birthday is. And just go.
That's quite. So no one can steal your credit card details.
It's Damon Wayans of the Wayans brothers is playing Murtaugh, but I do not know the Riggs character, who is called Clayne Crawford.
Mm.
Clayne, there's an American name.
Very out of touch with all these things.
We've also seen some other films that Justin isn't in. I'm sorry, but we have.
Why bother? What's the point?
You've seen something, haven't you, Merrick? You caught up on an old classic.
I watched Tootsie on film for you, but
Tootsie's a good film.
You'd not seen it before, though, had you?
No, I've seen it loads of times.
Oh, have you? Okay.
It's brilliant.
Really good, Tootsie. Yeah.
I think Dustin Hoffman, it just makes you want to live in the early 80s again.
As a woman.
In New York.
In New York, yeah. Bill Murray's playing his writer friend. It's basically, if you haven't seen it, you must watch it. It was really popular in the 1980s as Dustin Hoffman got nominated for an Oscar for playing Tootsie what's her name? The lady in it. She won.
Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange won an Oscar for her role in it. It's about an out of work actor who decides to dress up as a woman to try and get work. It's really funny. Dustin Hoffman's brilliant and charming. It's got a really great 80s New York feel to it.
It's when he had a very good run of, you know, Dustin Hoffman at his best kind of things.
What happened to Kramer versus Kramer
and then.
It was the White Chicks of its day, really, wasn't it? Tootsie.
No, more than that.
Speaking of the Wayans brothers.
Yeah, it kind of led on to, you know, famous cross-dressing capers like Norbit and Big Mama's House.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah.
It really
paved the way for all
I think it's the only...
Open the floodgates.
It's the only good example of cross-dressing ever.
Well, what about Some Like It Hot?
It's the second
example of good cross-dressing films. What else have there been?
The Crying Game. Oops, spoilers.
Yeah. Well, I'll watch that then.
I watched it with my dad when he came up to stay. It's, if you want a good film to watch with your parents, that's not going to be offensive. Perfect. Really funny.
It's a very good Tootsie. I remember, I think I watched it on Family once when we were all around on the telly, when the film used to come on and everyone would go, oh, we better watch this because we can't video this. Remember the excitement when films used to actually come on the telly for the first time.
Yeah.
Sort of 4 years after you'd last remembered
there was
they
no
were
way
in the cinema.
And they go, it's going to be on BBC Two at 9 o'clock tonight and that we have to watch this. Yeah, it was very exciting.
Well, I think Film 4 sort of show films in a loop off for about a month when they show them three or four times. So it's worth looking out for that.
I've just looked up, Dustin Hoffman is 78 now.
Well,
and
he's sort of retired into the Kung Fu Panda films where he can just be
Was he the voice? Because I saw Kung Fu Panda.
Shifu, I've not seen them.
Yeah, I saw
Is he like the mentor figure or something?
I guess he is.
Because I mean, you can just go to a air-conditioned recording booth and do your bit and then go home again.
You have to leave your house. You
know? Why would he do it, though? Why would he's 78. He's obviously made loads of money. Why
maybe
he
hasn't.
Still...
Maybe he's spent it all on...
Eggs.
And they depreciate in value over time,
don't
they?
Yeah, you buy them, they don't last forever, do they?
Yeah, he's probably did that.
That's probably what he's done. He's sitting there going, oh, why don't I buy these eggs? And then, I better do another voiceover. I'm sure that's it.
And he buys more eggs. He can't help himself.
Idiot. Yeah.
Well, I actually saw a interesting documentary that I've been wanting to see for a long time. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's called The Propaganda Game. And it's... I caught it on Netflix. But it's this Spanish documentary maker has made a film about North Korea.
Ah, I like it. I've not heard of it.
It's fascinating. Now, he gets access, because, of course, famously, no one gets access to North Korea, because there is this incredibly odd fellow who's a Spanish-born member of the North Korean army, who he's been in sort of love with North Korea and communism specifically since he was a teenager, and he now acts as almost liaison to the West because he understands them.
This rings a bell, I have heard, yeah.
And so, because they're both Spanish, he gets very restricted, guarded access to North Korea. And just seeing that much footage of Pyongyang, you know.
But outside of the normal things, because I'm slightly obsessed with North Korea, I read that Barbara Demick book. Which was really fascinating about, and then various other ones about it. And there's lots of stuff online now. There's a couple of journalists recently managed to get some more interesting photographs. But you tend to see just the same things that people are allowed
to
photograph. So does he manage to get...
Well, he only gets access to Pyongyang, of course, which feels a bit like Disneyland. But it's not fake in terms of you go around a street corner and it's all, you know...
Apart, no.
Yeah, no. But they've clearly sort of... Because this is the bit tourists are allowed in and visiting dignitaries and all the rest... The people who are given the resources and have a good life live there.
Yeah, no,
but we haven't a clue what's going on in the rest of the country.
No.
Apart from for when, you know, people manage to escape and then...
And tell you what's happened. Exactly. When you read the kind of transcripts of defectors, it's quite extraordinary. They'll go, one in 1,000 people ever gets to go to the capital city. It's just not, you know, that's the golden ticket.
But the indoctrination of the children, where the first thing they learn is to say, you know, all hail
the great leader.
And but what he's managed to do, which I think is quite clever, because of course he can't do this great expose revealing documentary about the country because he can't get in, is he's made it about the propaganda domestically and then actually the propaganda in the opposite direction from the West, because of course a lot of it isn't sort of trying to do down North Korea more than we find them so eccentric that anything we hear we believe, because we go, well, that sounds about right. They're mental over there.
They'd probably do that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they definitely all have to have Kim Jong-un's haircut now, which isn't true, but you know, when we hear it, if you have any interest in North Korea, like, it is fascinating.
I'll definitely watch that one, yeah.
What do they show then? Just what sort of footage has he got hold of?
Well, he's gone around all sorts of places. So he meets military leaders and he goes around museums. But the museum to their history is weirdly empty. And he's never told why there aren't any visitors there. But he's got the full run of the place, even though it's sort of like a normal day and everyone apparently has freedom. And then he actually, at one point, asks to if he can go to a Catholic service, because he claims to be Christian. I don't think he actually is. And they scramble, and after many, many, many phone calls, he gets to go to the Catholic church in Pyongyang, and they're told that they have total religious freedom in this idea that people are punished and imprisoned if they want to worship another religion is complete rubbish. But you then hear from experts and Amnesty International, everyone, that it's a theatre, basically. It's a fake Catholic church that they built the whole thing in the 2000s or something, so that visitors can go and go, oh yes, they do seem to be very
peaceful. Another mass at 1 o'clock, pop by. Shit, get the candles.
And they don't do communion or anything, because because they're not quite set up.
They haven't got the books, they haven't quite enough to do it.
Yeah, but it's just see these people all sort of dressed in exactly the same Catholic uniform, like it's a chorus line or something. It's very creepy. It feels... because everything's so clean and everyone is so happy, it feels a lot like watching an episode of The Prisoner or something, you know.
Would you like to live there?
Absolutely not, no.
I was talking with visiting hospital, I thought, no, I don't actually feel I want to now, because having seen so much footage of people's, you know, sanctioned trips, it just doesn't really, there's not much more to
it. It's a bit like a coach trip when you go abroad, you go on a coach trip and they make you go to like the Pearl Factory or the Factory.
Yeah, very designated routes to go. The only thing I'd be fascinated to see is there was a description, there was some, somebody put loads of photos on Facebook recently. They managed to get loads of stuff outside of the normal things, and they described their trip to the mausoleum. You can go and see the preserved bodies of Kim Il-sung and Kim and Kim Jong-il, and it's just, and he said that is absolutely extraordinary. You can't take a camera anywhere, you'd be killed if you took a camera even sort of within 100 metres. It's so guarded. But he said it's the biggest thing ever been to, just underground escalators going on for 3 miles at walking pace through just their whole lives. But he just said as a kind of museum to these two men, it is eye-wateringly expensive for the amount of constant guards there,
and it's all such recent history as well, it's the weird thing. Yeah.
It's crazy,
it's terrifying at sort of the level to which everybody behaves the same, you know, because of this indoctrination since birth. Of, you know, it, the only way this state can work is if everybody thinks it's a good idea.
Yeah.
They've got a point, haven't they?
Well, they do, but a free idea, a different opinion, isn't welcome because that could bring the whole house of cards down.
That would sort of pull it out and be. I mean, I've always liked the idea of North Korea is that everyone sort of gets the same clothes. I find that quite convenient within communist countries. Go, this, the state tells you, you've got to wear this. Everyone drives this car and everyone wears these trousers. You go, I don't mind that. That would make life a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I just wear the same stuff the whole time. Just wear dark blue.
I don't have much choice in clothes because of, you know, the size. So you just go,
Does Giacomo not do your sizes?
Giacomo's for fat men, don't
he? Oh, is it? I did their voiceover one.
Giacomo, for real men that are fat. I think that's what.
But Freddie Flintoff's not fat, he's an athlete.
Maybe. But mostly. Well, it's like when you go to High and Mighty, which I have to go to sometimes for you, but that's for, you know, it's more for the mighty than the high.
Right.
Most of the men in there are, you know, 60 inch waist trousers. But no, it's more just sort of height in trousers. And anyway, but that's nothing to do with it.
What size trousers are you?
Well, ideally, I like a 35 inch leg, which Marks and Spencer's do in some.
And what waist do you mind?
I'm currently about 38.
That's nice.
Yeah, not bad, is it?
It's nice.
Not bad, it's nice. But it's not his shoes. I've very big feet, so I have to go to, you know, Glam.
What size feet are you?
14. So I have to go to a, you know, High and Mighty for shoes. That's the main thing.
If anyone's got any spare size 14 shoes,
if anyone's just killed a clown.
8x35.
Yeah, send them in. I mean, I'll wear anything. But no, but yes. But that's where I think communism succeeds, is making everyone wear the same trousers. But other than that,
there's not like many perks.
I'd like to put my trousers on and have free thought while I'm wearing them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I enjoy sort of seeing the rare occasions when Alexei Sayle speaks out these days. I loved watching him when I was a kid. I don't think I truly understood the socialism aspect of it, but I found it entertaining. But he's one who's just like, yeah, it didn't work. Did it?
His parents were proper, you know, rabid Marxists. They were really, you know, total belief in it,
but no, it is fascinating. It doesn't give you that sort of sports movie-esque structure it sounds trite, but the best documentaries just luck out in, you know, that they have that ending and they have that, as just a sort of window into North Korea and just to make your own mind up as well. It doesn't tell you this is the way it is or this is the way it isn't or anything. You just have to watch the creepy experience and then make up your own mind. But it's worth watching, and it's available on Netflix now. I'm sure it's available elsewhere as well. But well, that'll do for this week, I think.
Yeah.
Justin, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Justin.
A pleasure. I better get back to Hollywood now.
Hollywood. Yes, your flight must be arriving soon.
Pretty soon, yes. I'm on the 1 o'clock to Hollywood Airport.
And you've got the very best seat, have you?
Yes, I'm right by the driver.
You get free milk?
Yeah, free milk. I get to sit at the front, pretend to fly it.
Have you got anything you'd like to plug?
No, really. What have I got? Okay, no. I mean, Murder is Successful, it comes on.
Are you in much of that?
Not much, no.
It's a good show, though.
I mean, very little of it, actually.
That's why it's a good show.
That's why it's a good. That's why it's a strong show, because it can't be down to nothing. That, Are You Being Served, which I still haven't seen, but that's kind of, No, and I'm recording with yourself, David Reed, on the drums, yes. Recording a new radio sketch comedy series for Radio 4, so there's that to look out for, but I don't know when that's going to broadcast.
But it's called Rum Bunch, so keep your eyes and ears open.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming. If you'd like to write to the show, we'll read out letters next week and every week after that, but go to filmfandango.com and follow the links from there to send us a message. But in the meantime, keep watching the films!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.